This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Super Bowl!
Mm-hmm.
Super Bowl!
Look out. Look out. 16-0 is on the table if
sure.
he plays well and the 49ers win. If he doesn't play well and the 49ers win, you're kind of where we are right now.
The problem with that is even if they had not called back those touchdowns, he still made all the bad throws that he made.
That's fair. And those counted.
Yeah. Even if the touchdowns counted, he still made a lot of bad throws that he shouldn't have made.
And just missed throws.
Yes.
Bad throws, I would say, imply bad decisions. Missed throws, throws that were there that he
just couldn't
complete.
You're right. More missed throws than bad throws. A bad throw or two as well.
Bad throw. Bad throw. Inaccurate throw.
Yeah.
I get where you're coming from there.
Yeah.
Let's hear from Mike Silver again. And we played this earlier, and this was... And I guess we'll do that coming up.
All right.
We'll hear from Mike Silver coming up.
Mike's
here.
Ready. Mike's ready.
Okay. Mike will be ready when Mike's ready, and we'll hear from him because he put it out there. And I'll admit my initial reaction was, really, today? And again, not a knock on Mike. I mean, he's reporting the information in a manner that does make sense because Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't good in the game on Sunday. But I'm thinking, God. Really? Like, all we've wanted all offseason long, right, was to see Jimmy Garoppolo play 16 games. And then he plays one game. Isn't great. 49ers win that game.
He was bad. He was bad. One game, but he was bad.
Was he bad?
Yes.
Was he bad?
In my professional opinion, he was bad.
Was he kind of eh?
I thought he was bad.
All right. Let's hear Mike Silver. After that 49ers win, this was on NFL Network on Tuesday.
Jimmy Garoppolo, you saw the touchdown. He also threw a pick six. You know, rough moments in the preseason. He's coming back from the knee injury. Guys, keep an eye on this. Nick Mullins is Kyle Shanahan's type of quarterback. He is almost a savant when it comes to understanding the offense. He really, really executes it in a way that Kyle Shanahan likes. If Jimmy Garoppolo struggles or continues to struggle and they're either losing or he's not playing well or both, I don't think it's that far-fetched that they could make a quarterback switch earlier than some people might imagine.
Earlier than some people might imagine. He does say losing or not playing well and continues to struggle, losing and not playing well.
Right. Yeah, I think it would have to be both.
You'd have
most
to have,
likely.
You'd have to have both because 2-0 is 2-0, and at that point you wouldn't want to mess with it. But are there really people out there that think Nick Mullins is better?
It doesn't really matter what people think. It matters what Kyle Shanahan thinks, and that's the core of what Mike Silver is suggesting. Nick Mullins is something of a savant, or at least Kyle Shanahan thinks so.
His type of quarterback.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Means he likes the way he runs that offense, that zone stretch, the bootleg, and maybe Kyle's just not pleased with the way Jimmy G still struggles to master certain aspects of it.
Is it problematic to you that, and this is perception, but the more time Jimmy Garoppolo's had in the offense, the worse he's looked?
Sure. You would expect the opposite, but there are so many other circumstances that come into play.
Because he was, pretty solid for a guy that was learning it on the fly going back the middle of two seasons ago toward the end.
What does that suggest?
Kind of that lightened up playbook.
Exactly.
Giving him the basics.
It cuts both ways there. Yeah, that could be as like, well, hey.
Because he was a quick learner, I think, back then.
Yeah.
Boy, quick learner with all the simple stuff.
The more
stuff.
He's got to learn, now you've had the offseason, you can learn the more complexities of the offense. Oh, you're not doing it right, Jimmy. That may be the way Kyle Shanahan's looking at it, and we have a story if that's what's going on. Otherwise, it's just a lot of fans overreacting.
I think the flip side to this whole thing, and it's something that we can get into that we maybe haven't touched on enough with all the Garoppolo mania, 49ers have a real shot at being
4-0. 4-0.
Did I just say that?
Yeah.
they got a better shot at being 4-0 than I think a lot of people would have expected coming into the year. I kid just a little bit, though.
Oh, you're not being serious?
I was being a little sarcastic.
3-1 would look pretty sharp, though.
3-1 would look amazing.
Yeah.
But there is one thing, Whitey, that the 49ers actually do have a great chance to have in their back pocket coming out of tomorrow's game at Cincinnati and coming out of Sunday's action. We'll tell you what it is next.
Mm.
It's JD and Whitey, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Whitey, we've gone so far off the rails that now I am on Twitter being accused of being a Garoppolonian. That's how far
yeah.
off this show is.
Well, you said even though Jimmy G may just be average, you got to play him all year long.
Yeah, play because I want to know.
But a Garoppolonian would never say that he's just average, which is what you've said.
A Garoppolonian would say that he's so good he could be bad and they could still win 15 games.
Garoppolonian would say he's the best football player ever and you cannot criticize him.
John Dickinson, Whitey Gleason, here on a Saturday with you until 1 o'clock on 95.7 The Game. Kyle Posey of Niners Nation will join us coming up here in about 10 minutes.
Excellent.
Joking about the 49ers going 4-0 before the break.
You tried to sell it, and
although,
you couldn't
much,
even do it. You
much,
backed off.
How much of a joke is that, really, at this point in time?
That's not a joke, but
the Bengals are meh. The Steelers stunk week one.
Steelers are still good.
And the Browns are a joke, Whitey.
The Browns are better than they played last week. They're not as good as so many people thought they would be. They're not a Super Bowl team, but they're better than the final score indicated last week. So 4-0, very, very unlikely. 3-1 would be build a statue of Kyle Shanahan time.
3-1 would be amazing.
Yeah.
And it would really set the 49ers season off on a positive course because at that point in time, you'd be 3-1 going into a divisional game on the road against the Rams. I would almost say that's a free shot at the Rams at that particular point in time if you're the 49ers at 3-1.
That's why tomorrow is so huge. A winnable game, right? No matter how you look at it.
50-50 kind of a game. Although, again, as we continue to go through that schedule, you know, Tampa is, they're who we thought they were. Although that win may look a little bit better.
Maybe.
Considering their win at Carolina on Thursday night. The Bengals played well at Seattle, and you know, what's funny, we were thrown around before the show. Well, what do you really have to go on as far as thinking the Bengals are better than maybe you thought they were before coming into the season? Well, they went to Seattle and almost won.
Yeah.
But that's worth something in a world the 49ers fans live in, which is that Seattle is pretty darn good, or at least better than the 49ers have been over the last few years.
Would you agree with this? I think a good rule of thumb on the NFL, especially early in the year, but I think this applies just about any time of year in the NFL. None of the very best teams are as good as you think they are, and none of the bad teams are really as bad as you think they are.
That's far too sane.
Yeah.
That's far too sane for my universe.
Yeah. So now, if that's true, if you buy into that, now you don't even know. One game in, you really don't know who's who or what's what. So it's really difficult.
I'm going to throw a hypothetical at you. I want to get an answer. And
hold on. Okay, I'm ready.
Are you ready?
Sure? Yeah. Hold on. Yes. Hold on.
Okay,
yes, I am.
All right. I want to make sure you're sure.
Yes.
Okay. Are the 49ers more likely to be 4-0 after their fourth game, week five.
Yeah, okay.
Or are they more likely to be in first place at the close of business at the end of week two?
Well, you know the answer to that.
That's three games.
I think you pointed this out to me.
It's three games.
Yeah.
It's the three games you can afford. It's three games that would have to go their way to be 4-0. It's three games that would have to go their way to be
first
place.
Well, you're the one that pointed this out to me. There's every reason to think that it's realistic to think they could be in first place after tomorrow.
49ers at Cincinnati.
Yeah.
You win that, you're 2-0. Seattle at Pittsburgh. I think we're counting that as a loss, right? For the 12s.
So. Sure. Yeah.
A loss for the 12s in Pittsburgh. And then the Rams are hosting the Saints.
Yeah, and the Cardinals tied last week, so they can't be 2-0.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're playing at Baltimore, so they're probably going to take a gigantic.
I still don't know how they tied the Lions, though.
Purple L.
Yeah.
It's funny, like that game, all I was reading, because I was at the 49er-Buccaneer game covering that here for 95.7 The Game, and I saw how poorly it was going via Twitter. I hadn't really watched a snap of that game, but it was all of these, you know, tweet after tweet after tweet about Kyler Murray. And it was, oh boy, it's Kyler Murray. Boy, can he sign back with the A's? Kyler Murray's got to be rethinking baseball. And I'm thinking, boy, this is, like, he's been really bad. And I kind of looked at his stat line at one point. And then 49er game ends, go down to the locker room, get some sound, get some video, come back up, get everything edited. I'm going to come on with the guys here that were doing the show. And all of a sudden, I look up, and you know, all the TVs in the press box, that game's not over. And not only is it not over, but it's tied. And I'm thinking, how the hell is it tied if Kyler Murray was so terrible?
Right.
And it turns out he wasn't so terrible in the second half. And the fourth quarter, primarily.
Yeah. The Lions became the lie downs, definitely in that second half. I thought they were going to be the kneel downs this year. I thought they were going to win some games. We'll see. But that was another one for them. That was a game they needed. If they were going to accomplish anything this year, they needed to win a game that they were leading by 18 points in the fourth quarter.
So 49ers more apt to be in first place.
Sure.
Than 4-0.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even with the Rams playing the Saints. Seattle playing Pittsburgh.
Sure, sure.
Like, Rams could easily win that game, right?
They could, yeah. A short week, I know, for the Saints. But if you're just talking which of those is more likely, can I ask you, based on last week and the entire NFL, if you had to give one game ball to a player based on week one, would you have somebody? We had some amazing things happen, of course. Lamar Jackson, Dak Prescott, perfect passer ratings, which I don't think has happened, where two guys had a perfect passer rating on the same day since 1978. It was Brian Sipe and Steve Grogan. I think, to me, it was Marquise Hollywood Brown, because he was on the field for, I think, 8 passing plays, and he scored 2 touchdowns. The first 2 times he touched the ball in the NFL,
that's
he catches
pretty,
passes
that's
from Lamar
pretty, that's
Jackson and scores a touchdown.
That's pretty good.
Again, it's against the Dolphins, as you pointed out. That anything you accomplish against the Dolphins, you got to put an asterisk by it.
And that would probably negate Jackson and Brown.
Could, yeah. You could argue that, sure.
So, it's, boy, I'm trying to think.
Just Dak, maybe? Top.
I mean, what the Patriots did to the Steelers was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, adding Antonio Brown to that mix.
Derek Carr.
Derek Carr was really good. Boy, that's a tough one. I'd probably have to sit on that one. Who would you give it to for the 49ers? I tell you, I wouldn't give it to Quan Alexander, who they actually gave the game ball to. That was a little peculiar.
I don't know. Richard Sherman? Richie James?
Yeah, who would you give it to? George Kittle?
Yeah, sure. Also last week, and I apologize because I'm sure his family's listening, I've forgotten his name, the Chargers, Badgley got hurt, their kicker got hurt, so the punter had to kick extra points and field goals, and I think he made one of each.
That's
impressive.
Big time. That's big time.
Yeah.
Phillip Rivers was a guy that came to mind. Just big game against Indianapolis.
Yeah. Adam Vinatieri cost the Colts the game.
No, how about that?
Another one I didn't see coming.
I mean, at some point you would think Adam Vinatieri would not have it. Apparently, it took him to, I mean, he's got to be, what, 45?
73? 70? Yes. Yeah, 72.
84.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive. But, yeah, no, it's, I think for the Raiders, it would probably be Derek Carr. I think for the Niners, I would have a difficult time. League-wide, though, that's a tough one. That's a real tough one.
Yeah. Well, Dak and Lamar Jackson were fabulous.
No, Dak, I mean, boy, the Cowboys look pretty good. They're pretty darn deep. Offensive line's good. They got receiver talent. If Dak can get the, you know, if pressure's off of him, you get Zeke back in the mix.
Yeah. Adam Vinatieri, by the way, is 46.
Wow. Wow. 46.
Yeah. And he said it himself. He was dreadful last week and arguably cost them the game, an overtime loss to the Chargers.
You know, something that stood out from the 49er game was there was an irony in it for me, just as somebody that's watched Richard Sherman over the years. For Richard Sherman to be involved in a pass interference no call that wound up being challenged and turned into an actual penalty, a definite irony there. But what have you thought so far of how that's gone as far as the reviewable pass interference and the officiating as a whole? Because, you know, down like Richard Sherman, he didn't think that one should have been overturned. Of course, what corner would? But we're starting to see, I think, where the line is drawn a little bit in terms of how that's going to be reviewed.
It's clear to me that the NFL's philosophy on this is, look, we have this rule, we had to put it in, or we felt we had to put it in, and now we have it. If we ever have an egregious miscall like we had in the NFC Championship game last year, we can trot this out. But we don't want to. And the message that they're trying to get the coaches to receive here is, don't challenge PI. We're not going to overturn anything unless a receiver gets murdered. If you think there was a PI and there's no flag, don't waste your time, because unless the guy was beheaded, we're not going to reverse the call. There's pass interference on virtually every play.
Did you think they got that one right with Sherman? I thought they did, actually.
Really?
But that's I would say maybe an outlier to what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't that
egregious.
You could
certainly make a case, though, right, that, oh, okay, there was pass interference there, which you can on just about every play. Yeah.
I thought live that was pass interference, and then it wasn't called, and then they reviewed it, and then I thought, yeah, that's too much contact.
Yeah.
But to what you're saying, I think more often than not, even that play with Sherman is not going to get overturned.
Remember last year, the NFL came out and said, look, you lower your helmet, there's going to be a penalty, whether you're a linebacker or a ball carrier, right? I remember I looked at that and said, you can't play football that way. Well, what'd they do? They ended up doing nothing. They didn't call it. Maybe a time or two. And I think we're going to get the same thing. I think this pass interference review rule is the first cousin of the lower the helmet rule last year. And yeah, coaches, you can challenge it, but don't, because if you noticed, it's not going to do you any good. You're going to lose a timeout. I really think that's what's going on. And I think that may be for the better, because otherwise I think you'd see games determined by pass interference reviews, and the NFL can't have that.
And if that happens, this rule is going to be one and
they
done.
They can't have that.
You can't have the Patriots just got that call when it looked like they were going to lose, and now they're going to win a playoff game. Like, you just, it's a slippery slope.
It's disingenuous, and it smacks of a typical NFL arrogance that they have this rule and they trumpet it and then they're not going to enforce it. But I think that's what's going on.
Okay. So far, so good, though.
I mean, it's a bad look when you have like Ron Rivera screaming at the officials, come on, it's pass interference. And, coach. But I think that's what we're going to get until the coaches realize, all right, just don't challenge that.
And then it finds a way to stick, because it really is going to be only the most blatant of calls.
I think so.
Like
what
happened in the NFC Championship.
I think
game.
So. Yeah.
Okay.
And I bet if they had it to do over, they would not even have the rule in right now.
Oh, I think that's 100% true. 100% true. Let's get to our next guest. It's a pleasure now to be joined by writer for Niners Nation. Kyle Posey joins us here on 95.7 The Game. Kyle, thanks a lot. You're on with John Dickinson and Whitey Gleason here on 95.7 The Game. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing well. Just general takeaways as far as week one to week two. A lot of the conversation is 49ers defense, great. Jimmy Garoppolo, not so much. Where do you come down on Jimmy Garoppolo's week one against Tampa Bay, and how much of a concern there should be moving toward week two?
I don't think there is much of a concern. I also don't think that he played very well. I think both of those things can be true. I mean, he's coming his first game in a year, and I think that it's pretty clear that he just doesn't know what he can do yet off that knee. Looks like he's a little tentative, and that caused some inaccuracy issues. But, you know, the further the season goes along, we'll see more and more how that continues to affect him. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure that it's not going to go away, you know, anytime soon.
Kyle, we've been hearing from a lot of Garoppolonians today. Garoppolonians, as you know, they never criticize Jimmy Garoppolo, and they think he's the greatest ever. I don't know if you're a Garoppolonian, but Jimmy G was rusty, and the team was rusty. How much of last week's sloppiness do you think we can attribute to opening day rust, if you will?
Hopefully, you know, the optimist in me wants to say week one, they're just getting all the kinks out of their system. But the penalties were a problem in the preseason as well. So I don't think this is anything new. And some of those calls were very ticky-tacky. Like, the pass interference on Juice, like, come on. That he didn't even do anything. But like you guys mentioned, just it seems like it circles back to the arrogance of the NFL, just the penalties. And I don't know. I wasn't really a fan of that. But at the same time, I don't think that that is going to be a problem moving forward, like consistently anyways. They're not going to have three or four touchdowns called back from a penalty. It won't be that egregious.
Kyle, what would have to happen for the 49ers to make a quarterback change in season? How bad would it have to look?
Yeah, we've heard some reports that they're not as married to Garoppolo as a starter. And, you know, Kyle Shanahan loves Nick Mullins, but I think it would have to be very bad. I'm talking like lose the next five or six games and just don't look very competitive. They are paying Jimmy Garoppolo a lot of money, and I don't think that they're going to let him – like, he would have to be very bad to put him on the bench. I just don't see them making that move.
Kyle Posey with us on 95.7 The Game, Niners Nation writer. Find him on Twitter at @KP_show. And, Kyle, what about the Bengals concerns you the most from the 49ers standpoint?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the Bengals, everybody thought, you know, this is one of the worst rosters in the NFL. They're not going to be very good. And they come out and they give Seattle a game. They were able to move the ball up and down consistently on them. They just, like the 49ers, they had some problems as well where they had turnovers and penalties that cost them. I think just the big plays by the Bengals. John Ross had a really big game last week, and they challenged Seattle down the field, and I don't know if the 49ers were challenged by Tampa Bay. So that'd be something that I'll keep an eye on, just the success the Bengals have passing the ball.
Well, and just the quarterback play, right? I mean, I know Andy Dalton takes a lot of criticism, but Andy Dalton is, at this point, five times the quarterback Jameis Winston is.
Yeah, Dalton is probably going to throw to the right color jersey, unlike Jameis did last week. And it probably helps a lot, too, for Andy Dalton that he now has an offensive guy, like, you know, somebody that worked with Sean McVay, somebody that really knows his offense, as opposed to like Marvin Lewis, who was kind of a dinosaur when it came to, you know, how the Bengals are run. So it'll be interesting. I think the Bengals will be able to move the ball a lot more than 49ers fans believe.
Kyle, in what area do you think the 49ers need the most improvement in week two over the opener against Tampa Bay?
They just got to stop shooting themselves in the foot in the red zone. They were down there three times, and neither of those times they were able to punch it in the end zone. So just got to get out of their own way. And I think that we will see a heavier dose of George Kittle, which is weird to say considering he had 10 targets, but just keep feeding him in the red zone. And when I say a heavier dose, I mean down there in the red zone. So that's what I would do.
Kyle Posey, our guest here on 95.7 The Game. Nick Bosa, somebody that, you know, all eyes on him. I thought it was a positive that he was able to play week one. He practiced just Friday this week, leading to week two. Where are you at on Nick Bosa is in terms of the risk in your mind as far as playing him this week and the potential for an injury that might keep him out, let's say, a month if he retweaks that ankle? Is it worth continuing to have him out there based on the impact that he had when he was out there against Tampa Bay?
That is a great question. This is a situation that I do not envy the 49ers coaches have to make, because Bosa was borderline dominant in his first game, which is pretty impressive. And it's clear that they are going to need him. The defense is going to have to rely on getting pressure with only four guys. And if Bosa, like John Lynch said, that he hurt himself on the very first play of the game, and these ankle injuries, they linger, and you don't want to mess with those. So the risk of going up against the Bengals, who are going to be playing their third-string tackle, Bosa is going to look very good again. But if he injures himself, if he tweaks something on his ankle, then we're going to be talking about this every week, I feel like. So it's tough. I personally would probably sit him, knowing that, you know, you have an early bye week coming up. And just giving him a week off might do wonders, as opposed to, you know, I just feel like the risk, the reward isn't worth the risk.
Hey, Kyle, we've been kicking this around a little bit. Before we let you go and get on with your day, which 49er would get your week one game ball?
Ooh, that's a good one. I would go Akilah Witherspoon, just because there was a lot of talk that the 49ers should have addressed the secondary earlier in the draft during free agency. And whether it was safety, whether it was corner, And he played so well. And they held Mike Evans to 28 yards. And most of us were believing that, you know, Evans would probably go for over 100 like he did last year when the two teams played. So, yeah, Witherspoon looked really well. I know he had the pick six, but he also had a couple plays where he just broke up a pass. He looked very confident, and that was a really good sign for him moving forward.
Kyle, we really appreciate the time. Thanks a lot for coming on, and we'll talk to you again soon, and make sure everybody checks out your stuff at NinersNation.com.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Kyle Posey joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Whitey, would you play Nick Bosa tomorrow?
Yes.
Why?
Absolutely.
I don't think I would.
Really?
But go ahead.
I just think this is why you got him, because you want him to, as Dieter Kurtenbach said, you want him to wreak havoc. That's why he's there, and he's got a golden opportunity to do so this week, and this is an important game for you. That's why he's here.
Do you think that the way the 49ers have managed Bosa, it is a tell in terms of a shift from not needing to win games as much the last couple of years, and the belief that you need to win games this season? Because the 49ers have been real cautious with injuries the last couple of years. Anybody that's got a little ding, he's probably not going to play. But Bosa worked hard to come back, and Bosa's clearly not at 100%, but yet he's a guy that they didn't practice, tried to get him a little bit of momentum toward Sunday.
At the risk of overanalyzing it, I would suggest it's an indication that John Lynch realizes, okay, at some point, some of these guys that I've drafted have to produce. We have to get something positive out of some of these players we've drafted. And as our top pick, can he play? Can he go? Is his foot attached? We're playing the Bengals. We played Tampa Bay. We need him out there. There's a little pressure on John Lynch in the front office to show that they have a clue what they're doing when they draft players.
I think I'd sit him. I really do. I think I would sit him.
It's so hard to say without knowing, you know, exactly how
yeah.
he's feeling.
And, look, I think he wants to be out there, because the knock on him has been, and the knock on his brother, and the knock on his family had been, well, they're soft. They're soft. And fair or unfair, that's kind of the knock.
If he can play on Sundays and then rest during the week, how much is it going to set back and complete recovery from his high ankle sprain, right?
Yeah.
Which those are, there was a time when that was not a thing. Those can be nasty. I don't know if you've ever had
right.
one. Yeah. So
yeah,
it's going to take
time
either way. And I would talk to the athletic trainer. Okay. How much if he plays even Sunday and then we don't practice him, how much is that going to set him back? And if it's a matter of weeks, why wouldn't you play him?
Yeah. I was a little surprised that he didn't practice Wednesday or Thursday, but he has, look, he got hurt at a practice. Guy rolls up on, and you can't have that either. So
no,
I get where you're coming from in terms of, okay, if you're going to risk a further injury, you might as well risk it in a game. And you know what?
Exactly.
If he comes up with a couple of sacks in the game,
there you go.
Then it's already a win. I just worry about the play that leads to the injury to where he's got to miss 6 weeks. Like, if is playing him Sunday worth it if he gets one sack, but he tweaks it again to a point where he can't play for a month and a half?
Got to roll the dice, baby. Playoffs. Got a chance to be 4-0. Nick, we need you out there, buddy.
I think he'll oblige to that. But at what cost? Again, I just think it's risky. I think it's risky, and I think
sure.
I also think it shows a paradigm shift toward got to win now, got to play through it. Whereas I think the last couple of years there was more of, you're not 100%. You know what? Rest up.
What about Raheem Mostert? He's going to have to play a lot more out of the backfield, right? So you'd take him off special teams? You'd have to, wouldn't you? And he's an excellent special teamer, as we all know. But if you need him in the backfield with Coleman hurt,
No, he's your number two back
yeah.
at this point.
Yeah.
So you got, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a tricky scenario, and one that I think they'd have to look. He's so good on special teams, though.
I know. And I do think they're going to miss Tevin Coleman. I don't know where you are in Tevin Coleman.
I think he's coming into the year. He was the back that I thought was going to be the leading rusher, the leading pass catcher. I think Breida's pretty good. I think you love Breida as your two. You really love him as your three. I think you like him as your two. I think there's questions about his durability if he's got to be your one, and he showed that a little bit last year. I mean, the 49ers went from looking like they had a glut of running backs now to maybe being real thin at that position. But I think they're happy to have Breida. But no, I think Coleman's a big loss. I think you saw early in that game how much Kyle Shanahan believes in Tevin Coleman, the fact that he was getting every single carry.
We just talked to Kyle Posey from Niners Nation. He has at NinersNation.com three numbers real quickly here on the game tomorrow that he thinks are important. 6.1, that's the Bengals' yards per play against Seattle in Week 1. 4, that's the number of explosive passing plays the Bengals gave up in Week 1. And 0-for-6, red area numbers from both offenses in Week 1.
That tells me something major that I'm going to hit on coming back here. It's JD and Whitey on a Saturday on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Whitey Gleason, we're with you here for another hour plus on 95.7 The Game. Cam Inman, the Bay Area News Group, he's going to join us from Ohio. That is coming up at 12:30, so keep it locked here at 95.7 The Game. A little more football conversation with Cam. Whitey, we're talking about Kyle Posey, our previous guest. He had a couple of notes, NinersNation.com, but there was one that struck me. Why don't you run through those again real quick?
Sure. Three numbers he had in his game two preview. 6.1, and that's the Bengals' yards per play against Seattle in Week 1. 4 is the second number, and 4 is the number of explosive passing plays the Bengals gave up in Week 1. And then the final number, 0-for-6, the red area numbers from both offenses in Week 1.
Two of those three things I think are big for the 49ers if those trends continue. The first one is the 4 explosive plays. 49ers are going to have to hit explosive plays. Like, that's they didn't really do that in Tampa. You could call the one play to Richie James an explosive play, but there were other plays out there to be had. Jimmy Garoppolo missed the throws. He's got to stick those throws. And if there are explosive plays to be had, the 49ers are going to have to cash them in. I also think the issues in the red zone, that is a promising sign, because the 49ers, if their defense can bend but don't break, not allow touchdowns, I think it'll provide them the margin for error that they need just in case Jimmy Garoppolo is show.
Mm-hmm. What about the argument that, and we've heard it, I think you may have mentioned it, the argument that the 49ers actually performed in the red zone. They just had some touchdowns called back, and some of those were ticky-tack calls.
Nah, I'm not going to go there. Look, the calls are the calls. If they're called, they're penalties. You can't. That's part of the problem. If you're a poor red zone team, is you have penalties that stall.
Execute
essentially
sure.
one penalty in the red zone. If it's a holding penalty, you're done. Usually, you know, at that point, it sets it up where it's not worth risking. You know, not you know maybe coming out of it without getting any points. A lot of teams just protect the field goal at the point where it's 2nd and 20, or you know, first and 20, 2nd and 14, whatever. A lot of times it's. It becomes just a foregone conclusion that you're going to try and take the 3 at that point.
Okay. Yeah, as for the number of explosive passing plays, specifically, the Bengals gave up 4 plays, passing plays that went for 16 or more yards against Seattle. So
the Niners
opportunities
are,
downfield
Niners
tomorrow.
Are going to have to hit the big play. That to me is because if you struggle in the red zone, and look, the 49ers struggles in the red zone go back prior to last week, but if you struggle in
the, back to Greg Roman,
yeah,
don't they?
I mean, really, yeah, they do. But if you're going to struggle in the red zone, you need to be able to score from outside the red zone. And being able to have explosive plays, that means that you're not going to have to score in the red zone because you're going to get it. You know, if you can hit 2 explosives for touchdowns, or 1 for a touchdown, 1 that maybe sets up a field goal, that's boom, 10 points right there. Your defense is playing well. Maybe Andy Dalton isn't going to throw it right to you 2, 3, 4, 5 times like Jameis Winston did, but with the offensive line issues the Bengals have, the pass rush can maybe make him uncomfortable. You can play that game on schedule as the 49ers did for the better part of that game at Tampa.
One thing that Kyle Posey said that I beg to differ with, and he made some excellent points, and we appreciate his time, obviously, but he pointed out that, okay, Andy Dalton now has a coach who's an offensive-minded coach, and maybe he'll blossom under this coach because before he had a defensive coach in Marvin Lewis. Okay, but he had some pretty good coordinators. Jay Gruden was his coordinator in Cincinnati.
And Hugh
did a pretty good job there. So even though, Andy Dalton's been playing for a defensive coach in Marvin Lewis. He's had some really good coordinators.
No, he has. And again, just going back to Andy Dalton,
He's had some big years.
He doesn't stink. I mean,
that's true.
I keep coming back to this. I know we're going to talk.
You're a Daltonian.
We're going to talk some hoops. I know primetime games and playoff games haven't really been his thing.
But he's gotten the Bengals to the playoffs in the first place.
Yeah, and I'm looking at his numbers, and I'm going back here. 2018, 21 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. 2018, 25 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. I'm looking at an 18-8 year. I'm looking at a 25-7 year, touchdowns to interceptions. I'm looking at, 33-20, but he threw 33 touchdown passes. Yeah, 20 interceptions.
Red rifle, baby.
But I'm looking at some of these years, and I'm thinking to myself, and you had the exact number, Jimmy Garoppolo with the 49ers, or Jimmy Garoppolo for his career. I mean, if you're a 49ers fan, you would love a 21-11 year from Jimmy Garoppolo, wouldn't you?
Sure. Yeah.
No? Or is that kind of...
If they win 21-11, I mean, if they're winning, that's probably a little low. It looks good right now after last week.
All right. But what's Jimmy Garoppolo's over? You had it.
TD to TD interception. As a Patriot, I think, and he didn't play much, obviously. I think it was 5 touchdowns as a Patriot, no picks. Since he's joined the 49ers, it's 13-9. 13 touchdowns, 9 picks.
So at that point, if it's 13-9, I'm taking 21-11.
Uh-huh. And that's not even Andy Dalton's best year. Not close to his peak performance.
I'm looking at 25-7. 25-7.
Weren't he and Colin Kaepernick drafted?
Yes.
Yeah. Same draft. Yeah. Andy went much higher.
And Andy Dalton, 20 TDs and 13 interceptions that first year.
As a rookie.
Yeah.
Playoffs. Okay.
And that was one of those games going back to 2011 when those two teams played, week 3? That looked like, that's two bad teams going at it. And it wound up being an ugly, 13-8 win for the 49ers. And it wound up being two of the better teams in the league squaring off.
Yeah.
In the early going.
So you never know, do you, what's going on early in the year?
You never really
know. A lot of it is a mirage.
The one thing that we do know, and you mentioned this to me during the break, the NBA has fixed tampering.
No more tampering. That's great, right? They've cracked down on tampering. How? By sending a memo. So the NBA is sending a memo to teams informing them that you can't tamper anymore. So problem solved. No more tampering.
No more tampering.
Mm-hmm.
They're also going to impose heavier fines.
Yes, increased fines.
Tampering is found to be going on. Shenanigans. Tampering shenanigans.
You know, you can understand, right, if you're a small market owner especially, how upset you'd be. And apparently there were a lot of very frustrated owners and members of front offices looking at how these names, these free agent names, like, wait a minute, he just became a free agent and he signed a deal. There's no way that can happen without tampering, Commissioner.
How'd that happen?
Yeah. Mm. So do you think the league really cares? I mean, obviously owners do, but if you're... You know, Adam Silver, does he really care? No, it's like, some of these guys in small markets are upset, so I got to do something. But free agency is a boon to the NBA.
I think the NBA loves where it's at. I think that they want to limit the perception that there's something untoward going on.
This memo proposes that a lead team ops member... according to Shams Charania, certify annually that the team did not engage in impermissible free agency talks.
So what does that mean? You get in a room and you say, hey, we were by the book.
Yeah. You got to certify it. We did not do it. Okay, rubber stamp it.
How do you certify it? You just say it?
Well, you have to have a witness and all that, sure.
You turn in your cell phone.
Yeah, yeah. Max fine amounts raised significantly. Tampering with player team personnel, $10 million up from $5 million. Unauthorized agreements, $6 million for a team, $250,000 for player.
Now, how are you going to enforce that? That's the big thing for me. How do you enforce it? You get wind, and you. I mean, what is the investigation? I mean, can you start confiscating cell phones. And
well, you launch your investigation, and the team says, look, we have this memo right here from our lead team ops member, and he's certified that we did not engage in any impermissible talks. Okay, yeah, you guys win. Sorry. Yeah, they're clear. Thanks. Next.
So this is total CYA, as far as you're concerned.
And it's, all right, pipe down, you angry owners. We're going to do something about this. They're not going to do anything about that. But should they is the question. Is it a problem? How big is the issue of tampering? How big of a problem does it pose for the league as a whole? For fans, we probably don't care, right? We like to hear it. Kevin Durant's going where? What happened?
Well, you like it until your team loses a guy like Kevin Durant. You like it until you're Oklahoma City and you lose Paul George and Russell Westbrook, basically because Kawhi Leonard wanted to play for the Clippers. I mean, think about that.
Yeah, I know.
Think about that. You're Oklahoma City, and you've got Russell. And look, maybe it had run its course with Russell Westbrook, and it was time to move on. But you go from, over the course of years, you go from Harden and Durant and Westbrook to Durant and Westbrook to just Westbrook to Westbrook and Paul George. And now you got neither one. And the reason you have neither one is because Kawhi Leonard wanted to play with Paul George in L.A.
If you're a Thunder fan, you don't like that, right?
No.
But the league loves it. Kawhi Leonard's going to the Clippers? Home run.
Well, the league loves it because they can say, and by the way, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Hour number four, JD and Whitey here on a Saturday. The league can say, boy, but players can take more money to stay with their team that drafted them, stay with the small market.
That just isn't working.
But see, I think the league likes that. I think the league likes the fact that that's not working. I think the league loves the fact that they have parameters in place to protect the smaller market teams, but players are still going to find their way where they want to be. I think that's actually the perfect – that's a dirty little secret, but I think that's the perfect way to say it.
The NBA is hurtling towards the day – and we're already partway there, the day when all the small market teams are the New Jersey Generals to every other big market team's globetrotters. One more thing, and you raise an excellent point. How are they going to enforce this? Teams would be required to report within 24 hours of a player agent soliciting unauthorized benefits or contact regarding contract matters. So to answer your question, they're not. Unless an agent reports himself or an owner reports himself, or unless small market teams have spies following around the agents.
That's what it's going to turn into.
All right.
Oklahoma City's going to use all that money. They're not paying Paul George and Russell Westbrook to hire a bunch of moles.
Yeah.
You're going to have to.
And that'll be great for the league.
A little bit of a somber day earlier this week. Sean Livingston hanging him up. What your initial thought? I mean, Sean Livingston, obviously, it's Curry, and it's Klay Thompson, and it's Draymond Green, and it became Kevin Durant, but I think not really. It was more Iguodala in that mix. But as far as the guys, Durant was he was a hired assassin that spent his time and moved on to other things. But as far as the core, the three championships, the guys that were a part of all of it, Sean Livingston, the most underappreciated, under-talked about. I mean, how would you categorize Sean Livingston as far as you had the big three in Iguodala, but Livingston was right there with everybody else.
Yeah, key piece of that bench, and he was there for all the championships, right? And there weren't that many guys that were there for all of the championships. And of course, the incredible thing about him, as we discussed yesterday, he made the announcement yesterday. The thing about Sean Livingston is he's drafted at a high school, and when his third year of his career, just a catastrophic knee injury, virtually no part of his knee escaped injury when he suffered this horrific injury. There was talk in the hospital. He was told, you may lose the leg, and he goes on to play 15 years in the NBA after that.
Yeah, 15 years in the NBA, and a guy that just wound up being the perfect extra piece.
Yeah, and his career is backwards in a sense because he played for the Clippers for 3 years, then the injury, and then he bounced around to a lot of teams. He played for a lot of teams. And then at the end of his career, he found a home and played 5 years in Golden State. So it took him 10 years to find really an NBA home.
And he provided a skill set And yeah, the intangibles and the personality and the leadership and all of those things. I mean, he was a calming influence in a similar way that Andre Iguodala has been credited for, you know, being a calming influence over this, you know, group of frenetic players that the Warriors put together, star players. But his offensive game also was just a different skill set than the Warriors' other. I mean, he was a guard that was long and could post up. He was a mid-range player when the mid-range was completely falling out of the game. I mean, his game was just, it was unique.
Yeah, people will always remember the Warriors for, among other things, the Splash Brothers, right?
Yeah,
and
they helped usher
in the era of perimeter-oriented basketball, which has been spectacular to see, and it's part of the natural evolution of the game. But to your point, Sean Livingston was, I think he shot, we looked up yesterday, 29 threes
in his career.
Yeah, yeah.
So
and
like
it was Mr. Back you down and post you up with that flat 12-foot jumper.
And it was a go-to. I mean, there were countless stretches over the 5 years, maybe not as much in this last year. It had waned a little bit where you went down to him on the block and he was just going to score. Or he had an open 14-footer. He knocked it down every time, it felt like, or at least a lot of the big ones. I mean, he was a key contributor and a heck of a find for this Warriors team that turned into a dynasty.
Yeah, so when he was injured, he said he did not want that injury to define him. It certainly has it. It's an incredible, remarkable, and inspirational story, and he's had a remarkable career. It was time now. I believe he said the knee was, he's starting to feel all the wear and tear. But where do the Warriors go from here in terms of their bench? Because they have some key figures off that bench to replace now.
It's completely different. I mean, and they're going to have to rely on young players. They really are. And they're going to have to rely on D'Angelo Russell he's going to be a starting player for them with Klay Thompson out, but I think they're going to have to rely on D'Angelo Russell being a bench player because of the, you know, Stephen Curry play the whole first quarter. D'Angelo's going to sub out at some point. D'Angelo's going to come back in beginning of the second quarter, and I think that's where you're going to see him almost lead a new wave bench, probably with Willie Cauley-Stein out there for pick and roll, and then
does Kevon Looney become one of your bench adults now?
I think he's going to have to.
Yeah, it looks like it.
I think he's going to have to, and I think, you know, you look at the center spot, you know, the Warriors use so many different players there. To your point on Looney, I mean, Looney's almost going to have to be it's almost going to be, Cauley-Stein will start, but it almost feels like Cauley-Stein plays the beginning of every quarter, and then Kevon Looney's going to end up playing the end of every quarter. But to your point, he's going to be one of those first guys in midway through, let's say quarter one and quarter three, that's going to have to be a calming influence at the big man spot.
Mm-hmm. So a tough year for Steve Kerr, right? But on the other hand, maybe it was...
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.